UFP, the United Federation of Podcasts.
Welcome to Franchise Fatigue, the little podcast on the United Federation of Podcast Network, where your hosts go through movies, remakes, and sequels, and requels. I'm your host, Brian J. Mutella, and joining me, as always, is my ever-toxic co-host, Zach Moore.
Brandon, how can fandom be toxic?
It's about love. It can't be toxic if it's about love.
I don't know if I was being personally attacked in this movie or not, but we can discuss.
All I'm going to say is, when I was in the theater, you were the only person I was thinking of. I'm kidding, but not really kidding, but kind of kidding. Anyways, we are here to talk about Scream 2022, and I'm looking forward to this. I went and saw it on Friday, so we were late to the game. It'd been out for a couple weeks, and I'm so glad that I had no spoilers on this. I texted you and I said, I need to go and see this right away because I think I just saw a spoiler. Do you want to know what it was that I saw?
Yeah, no, I want to know what it was that you saw. By the way, spoilers for Scream 2022. Not Scream 5. Scream 2022, by the way, from this point forward. So if you haven't seen the movie, go see it.
Right away.
Now, Brandon, tell me what you thought you saw that threw you off.
So this is what I thought I saw that was the spoiler. So on the letterbox page for the film, there's like Courtney Cox's character like behind the mask, right? And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. She had better not be the killer in this movie because I'm going to be upset.
That's from a series of, I think, posters that they did.
Oh, is it?
Where all the characters have masks, right? So that... There's no way she would have been the killer, though.
Well, that's what I thought, too. And then I saw this picture, right? So, anyways, but I went and saw it Friday night. And Zach, I saw it back to back. I saw it twice.
That's insane. You know, you hear stories about people, like, when they saw the first Star Wars, they're like, I got out of the theater, and I looked at my wife, and she looked at me, and we just had this understanding that we had to see it again. So we got back in line and saw it again. I think Ron Howard actually told that story at some point. I saw him in an interview, and I'm like, wow, seeing a movie back-to-back like that, that's interesting. So you saw this twice in a row at the movie theater.
Yes, but I'll tell you there's a thing about this. So I regret that I didn't see Halloween Kills twice before we podcasted about it because I really needed to process it. And with my work schedule right now, when I go to see a movie at 7 o'clock, I can't go and see it again at 9. So this one here, I went to a 3:40 showing, and then I went to a 6:20 showing. I went knowing I was going to go see it twice because I wanted to be prepared because I've been looking forward to this one here. And yeah, I think the last time that I saw a movie twice in one day was Star Trek Beyond. And I was
Star Trek. Yeah, you saw that twice in one day as well.
Yeah, but I went knowing I was going to see it twice. And
I don't think I've ever done that.
No,
I've never seen a movie twice in one day.
Yeah, I regret that decision for Star Trek Beyond, but I don't regret it for Scream. Let me tell you.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. You know, Brent, this is the first Scream movie I saw in the theater.
Is it? This is the fourth one I've seen in the theaters.
Wow.
Yeah. Cool. Well, welcome to fandom. I'm glad that we found these for you. And
yeah,
I'm
glad we found each other on Reddit.
Yeah.
So we can plot our next installment of this franchise.
Our next subreddit for Franchise Fatigue. So I don't use Reddit. Do you use Reddit?
No, I don't. I go on there occasionally, like, because I know, like, that's where, like, if you want to find, like, some fan theories about stuff or discussion, you know, whatever, right? Like, so random topics, I might say, oh, I think people are probably talking about this on Reddit. I want to plug into this conversation when I don't know people in my own circles, right, that would be talking about it. But no, I don't have an account, like a personal account or anything. I don't, when did Reddit start?
Well, isn't that what they were talking about in Scream 2?
No, that was the dark web or whatever.
Oh, okay.
Isn't this
where they found each other in Scream 2?
Yeah.
Okay, so let me get this straight. Are you telling me that I could go to Reddit and have a conversation with people about Children of the Corn 4?
You could. I guarantee you. There's probably a subreddit, as the kids say, about it. But man, yeah. So, hey, Scream 2022. I think it was a missed opportunity not to call it Scream with a 5 at the beginning.
Yeah, let's just call it Scream 5 going on from
Scream. Yeah, we will. Okay. Well, but it's a requel, like something that we've actually discussed. Hey, so this franchise is made for us.
We should have copyrighted that when we were covering. Was that when we were covering Halloween? I think it was.
That's a term that exists.
No, that was ours. These writers listened to our podcast and stole our terminology.
All right. Well, we're gonna show them who's boss though. So.
Excellent. Right on. Well, do you want to jump into the trivia right away?
Yeah, well, let's get into it.
Okay, let's do the trivia before you tell me why you gave this another 5 stars.
We'll get there. Okay. So, this is the first Scream not directed by Wes Craven, who passed away in 2015 from cancer,
That's
as we
no
discussed
excuse.
In our last conversation. They always come back. Not Wes, though. But the character Wes in the film was named in his honor. And, of course, there was a dedication to him in credits. And I thought to myself, I went through like a roller coaster of feelings about the character named Wes in here. I'm like, oh, that's cool. They named a character Wes. Mm-hmm. Oh, they just brutally murdered a character named Wes. Oh, they had like a celebration like for Wes at the end. I'm like, okay. Like there's a party and it's like a for Wes. I'm like, okay. So it kind of came back around. For a minute there, I was like, damn, you guys just killed this guy named Wes. Let the past die. Kill it if you have to. We'll talk about The Last Jedi in this conversation, I think.
I think we will.
Now, the distributor for Scream 2022, Scream 5, like you said, we'll call it Scream 5 now on. So they got distribution rights for the first three Screams when they purchased a stake in Miramax in April 2020. And Paramount's also a sister company to MTV, which aired the Scream TV show, which we talked about on our Patreon. Mm-hmm. So go to patreon.com/UofPEarth to sign up for that, to hear Brandon and I talk about season one of Scream and perhaps more seasons as we go through this.
Yeah.
Now, Dimension Films lost the rights to Scream that they had since the first movie in 1996. Lantern Entertainment and Spyglass Media Group bought the rights to some Dimension franchises, including Scream, Scary Movie, and Brandon, Children of the Corn.
Oh,
so
nice.
There you have it. And then Spyglass Media, you know, has the rights now. They also secured the rights from Fun World to use the original Ghostface mask for Scream 5. So
that would have been a shame if they couldn't. Because while we had opinions on the mask for the TV series, if they didn't use it for this movie, that would have been bad.
Absolutely. You have to, like, it's a part of the story now, right? In and out of universe.
I'm okay with him changing to his weapon to a flamethrower, but, you know, the mask's got to stay.
That's right. It has no connection to the original. Screenwriter James Vanderbilt's wife's name is Amber Freeman, the name of a character in this film. She's, spoilers, one of the killers.
Oh, so, really giving away.
So, what does
early?
That say? You made your wife one of the ghost faces. What does that say about you, James Vanderbilt? Now, this is the first film in the whole series not to be scored by Marco Beltrami.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Tyler is now the composer, and he composes a lot of the some of the Marvel scores, mm-hmm. the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and stuff like that. I thought he did a really good job. It didn't stick out to me as not being Scream.
You know what else he did? A lot of the Fast and Furious movies.
Of course, he did. So. Now, Neve Campbell was initially hesitant to return to the franchise, especially since Wes Craven wasn't going to be coming back. And with new directors, she was like, well, I kind of would want Wes Craven's blessing and this and that. So there were two directors.
She knows why that didn't happen, right?
Yes, okay. I'm sure someone told her. But so there's two directors on this film, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing their names correctly, so I apologize. But Matt Bettinelli-Ulpin and Tyler Gillett.
Just like there was.
Those are the two directors.
Just like there was two killers.
Two killers, two directors, right? So they wrote a letter to Neve Campbell talking about how much Wes Craven and his films meant to them as filmmakers, and he was an inspiration for them to get into the business, and that is what kind of won her over to appearing in the film. And the line, "I'm Sidney Prescott, of course I have a gun," was her idea. Mm-hmm. She added that line to the film. And David Arquette, who returns as Dewey, he was excited to regrow his famous mustache for the role. So that was his look there. And just how David Arquette and Courtney Cox got divorced in real life, Dewey and Gale got divorced. And the franchise. But they still keep in touch as friends.
Life imitates art.
Or does imitates it, life. Or does imitates art.
Or does art imitate life? I don't know.
It's, yeah. We can talk more about that as we go here. Now, Heather Matarazzo comes back from Scream 3 as Randy's sister. Mm-hmm. And she's the mother of the twins, mm-hmm. Chad and Mindy. So I thought that was cool because it's like, who are these family members? Oh, that's, you know what? That's actually a character we saw before in an actress. Mm-hmm. So like, there you go. Scream 3 justified its existence by having... I was, because I'm like, when they mentioned, oh, well, he was our uncle, I was like, okay, I guess they're the kids of the girl we saw in Scream 3, like we're going to see her. And then she comes in. I was like, good for you, guys.
Yeah, that's quite the... That was the deep cut there, hey?
Yeah, yeah. Now, a deep cut for me, as a Smallville fan, is Kyle Gallner. Right? Kyle Gallner played the Flash on Smallville in a handful of episodes. He played Vince Schneider, who is the nephew of Stu from the first film. And he's the guy with the car, the older guy with the mustache, who's like kind of like, hey, you know, like getting on high school girls and stuff. And he appeared in the remake of Nightmare on Elm Street, which, of course, was the remake of the Wes Craven original. So there's some 6 degrees of Wes Craven going on there. Mm-hmm. And in the scene where he dies, we hear Nick Cave's and the Bad Seeds, Red Right Hand. The song is back. I was very happy about the song being back, because it was, even though Scream 4, I've said, is like, might be my favorite, I did miss the song. Mm-hmm. So now in the original Scream, Billy Loomis, he talks about the effects that horror movies can have on people. And he talks about Silence of the Lambs and how Clarice sees flashbacks of her dead father. You could see that as a, you know, a foreshadowing of Billy Loomis's appearance in this film.
Mm-hmm.
We can talk about that as we go. We don't need to talk about it here, but yes, Billy Loomis appears as a CGI younger Skeet Ulrich.
Sort of so, younger looking.
Yeah. I'm like, well, I don't think he looks like a high schooler, but I don't even think he looked like a high schooler then. So maybe that's that's part of the thing, right? Now, like all the previous movies, Roger L. Jackson, the voice of Ghostface, is actually on the phone with all the actors and actresses that he talks to in the film, which is unlike, you know, I was looking into some trivia on the TV show, by the way, and the TV show did it differently. It wasn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the TV show voice, you know, I don't think we really talked about it in our Patreon discussion, but I will say, like, it's nice to hear him back because his voice is so much better.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, the guy on the TV show, I'm sure he's trying his hardest, but it's like, if I tried to do it, like, it's just someone just impersonating, you know, a brand X version of Roger L. Jackson. So,
although, I mean, like, I would say you could probably do it. I mean, you do a pretty good Shatner.
Thank you for that, Brandon.
You're welcome.
What's your favorite scary movie?
Star Trek V.
I appreciate that. So, in an interview, the directors, Bettinelli and Gillett, again, if I'm pronouncing it wrong, I apologize. But speaking of voices, they revealed that Matthew Lillard and Drew Barrymore had voice cameos in the movie. Matthew Lillard, Stu, from mm-hmm. the first movie, and, of course, Drew Barrymore, the first girl who died, and the first Cece
mm-hmm.
In the first movie.
I thought that was Heather Graham.
That's Stab.
Oh.
One of the voiceovers is... He does the voiceover for the Flamethrower Ghostface. He's like, this is lit! And then also, there's a line where at the big house at the end, and he's like, cool house! And it's funny because, of course, that is the same house of Stu's from the first movie. So I thought that was cool. And then Drew Barrymore is the voice of the principal.
Okay.
Casey. Cece is Scream 2, I think. Casey is Scream 1.
Sounds well right.
So anyway... That was cool. She just did a quick voiceover. And that's, you know, in the horror tradition, right? Like Jamie Lee Curtis doing voiceovers in like Halloween 3 and stuff. So I thought that was pretty cool. Now, Hayden Panettiere didn't film any scenes, but she did record ADR for a Wes Craven tribute. When they all say for Wes, they had a lot of the actors and actresses from previous films like just say for Wes or something, right? That included Drew Barrymore, Matthew Lillard, Hayden Panettiere. I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name right here. I've been a fan of hers for years. I don't know. Jamie Kennedy and Henry Winkler.
Oh, nice.
So they all were in the For Wes, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Nice.
And there is an Easter egg about her character Kirby from Scream 4 didn't die. And later on, when on YouTube, when Richie is watching the YouTube videos about Stab and Stab 8,
yeah.
One of the recommendations on the side say an interview with Woodsboro survivor Kirby Reed.
Oh, wow.
So... she could come back for Scream 6, in theory.
Which also, we recently got a confirmation that it's been greenlit. Yeah.
So I bet they bring her back. I would like to see her back. Also, something we've joked about is Stu coming back, right, in some form or fashion, right? And there was another YouTube video in those recommendations that said, did the real life Stu survive? So that's an obvious way to go for script. We'll talk about it, right? But anyway.
YouTube's the way to go?
YouTube, yes. That's the point of that, is the YouTube is the way to go. Now, Patrick Dempsey, who played Mark, Detective Kincaid, in Scream 3, he didn't appear in Scream 4. They talked about it, but he would have had scheduling conflicts with Transformers Dark of the Moon. But when Sydney references her husband, Mark, that's presumably Mark Kincaid. What'd you think of that?
I was wondering if that was him or not. Like, you know me, I'm bad with names as it is, but I'm like, I wonder if that's a guy from Scream 3.
Well, in an interview, Neve Campbell said, I didn't realize it when I was saying it. What's funny is I played Patrick's sister in Grey's Anatomy. So I didn't know that, actually.
Okay.
Neve Campbell was on Grey's Anatomy and played, because Patrick Dempsey was a main character on that show for several years. And I guess she appeared on that show as a sister. So.
Oh, that's funny.
So that's interesting. And so, like, okay, so if let's just assume they got together in 2000. They don't really talk about Sydney's marital status in Scream 4. That's fine.
Yeah.
You know, she's doing her thing. I don't think she's wearing a ring or anything. So maybe they dated for a while. They didn't. They got back together. Let's say they got together in, like, 2012, then, a year after. Like, maybe they got back together or something. I don't know. So she just had babies, like, now?
Yeah. Well, she could have had a couple. They could have been, like, her fourth or fifth kid.
Oh, that's true.
Right?
Okay, so. I didn't even think about that, but, okay.
But she did say, I think I'll keep him, right? So, I mean, like, that could be a joke on, like, yeah, well, they've been together for 10 years already, I think I'll keep him. Or they could have just gotten together, and I think I'll keep him, right?
So. Well, I like how we can connect those dots, because, you know, we talk about Halloween, and we're like, well, who is the father of, you know, the kids, right? And the new franchise, and so it's, we always said it was the last Starfighter. It's
clearly
was.
Clearly Ben Tramer.
Yeah. Yes. I don't even know what timeline that guy's alive in anymore over there. But anyway, that's pretty funny. Now, there is a reference to Tatum, Dewey's sister, who they never talk about ever after the first movie. Mm-hmm. But there's a reference to her. Her urn is her ashes are on Dewey's mantle at his place. So I thought that was pretty cool. And let's see, a few more random odds and ends as we wrap up the trivia here. There's the post-it note at the Sheriff Hicks' house about the lemon squares.
Yes, I love that.
Being in the fridge.
Cute. That was cute.
That's a fun callback. Tara is watching an episode of Dawson's Creek in the hospital. That's a episode called The Scare, and it's an homage to Friday the 13th.
Okay.
About the cast, you know, talking about, or the characters talking about how a serial killer is going to catch them. Joshua Jackson, who appeared in Scream 2, is in Dawson's Creek. Mm-hmm. By the way, Randy Quaid in this, the son of Dennis Quaid and Meg Ryan, he gives me big. He's Boimler on Lower Decks.
Yep.
So, and he gives me huge Joshua Jackson vibes.
Yeah,
I don't know about you, but
all I pictured is Boimler.
Like, why is your hair not purple?
Why is your hair not purple? So. Like, why? All I just pictured they should just release the Boimler cut of this. They should just animate, like, rotoscope Boimler over top of him.
That's true. And then, you know, in a 6 degrees of separation, life and imitating art or whatever, Dewey tells Sydney that he sees her as a young Meg Ryan in the first movie. So hashtag it's all connected somehow, right? Mm-hmm. So the let's just get to it here, right? The characters of Dewey and Hicks, right? But the sheriffs here, they're both supposed to be killed off in the first movies they appeared in.
Mm-hmm.
Dewey was supposed to die in the first Scream, and then Hicks was supposed to die in the fourth Scream. And then they changed the scripts, and both their characters survived to live another day, and they both died in the sequel.
This is a very bloody movie.
I was sad that Hicks died. I thought she was kind of she was kind of an annoying character in Runaway and 4, but I did kind of like her, and I'm glad she didn't die. And then this one, I'm like, oh, it's nice to see her again, right? Someone outside of the main three characters that carried over, which is rare.
Right.
And then they just kill her.
Although that was a good kill. That was a really good sequence.
That was a very good sequence. Have you ever seen Psycho?
Yeah. And then that's the exact shot from Psycho.
Yeah, of the shower head. Yeah. That's amazing. Now you were talking about the poster that you saw on
Letterboxd.
On Letterboxd, right? Now in the final poster for Scream 5, there's a tagline that says the killer is on this poster.
Yeah.
Which is pretty funny because it's got Ghostface, obviously, but then has all the other characters, right? And then, yes, of course, you could look at it either way. Like, the two killers, Richie and Amber, are on there. And then, of course, Ghostface is face. So
yeah, when the Scream account did that on Twitter, I pictured my iPad of Ghostface. I'm like, it's him, isn't it? And I just replied that. They didn't give me a like. I was very sad.
So it's all about the likes.
It's all about the
Yeah, as we mentioned earlier, Scream 5 has done pretty well financially. So it had a budget of $24 million. And as of this recording, it has a worldwide gross of $120 million, over half of that being domestically. So very, very big success. And They have greenlit Scream 6. And the directors and writers from Scream 5 will come back for Scream 6, which is supposed to start production this summer 2022.
Is that the one with time travel?
So, I don't know. I thought Stab 5 was the one with time travel. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So there you go. There's your trivia. And we, of course, we'll get into more things as we discuss it here. But there's your flyover.
Yes. Okay. Awesome. Good job on the trivia there, considering this is a brand new film. That's a very good job, Zach. I appreciate it. I enjoyed this film a lot. I had a lot of fun watching this. And I bet you I can guess what your favorite joke is in this whole movie. Let's just start with the best joke. So remember how we said the last Scream 4, there was a very direct reference to them using Stab 7 and like was directly related to the Saw films?
Yeah.
Well, Stab 8, right, was directed...
You mean Star Wars 8?
Was directed by the guy that directed Knives Out.
Right.
Which is Rian Johnson, right? So they're definitely calling out all the stuff about The Last Jedi in this, which is Star Wars 8, right?
Right.
And, like, redo Stab 8, redo this and that. I thought that was a lot of fun. I thought that was pretty funny.
That was fun. I think they played it down the middle enough to, like I don't feel like they were, like, attacking people who just didn't like the movie. They were attacking people that kind of went overboard about not liking the movie. Because I personally... I don't like Last Jedi at all. I think it completely broke Star Wars, and I think everything since then has proved that it did, considering Rise of Skywalker was a 180-degree turn,
right.
And everything we're seeing on Disney Plus now is like, we're sorry, look, here's Luke Skywalker and another thing. So, look, if you like it, good for you, right? But I think Disney can even see, even though they'll never admit it, like, right. I think we kind of made a misstep here, we got to course correct. So, it's fun, they don't say Rian Johnson per se, they say Stab 8, right? You know, you do the math in your head, yeah. Last Jedi is Star Wars 8, the fandom that were overreacting, like, the remake it, all that stuff you said, like, the original, these are people's lives and childhood!
Yes.
So I didn't like it, but I don't go overboard and stuff like that, but I think they handled it well enough.
Yeah. See, here's the thing with something like this. Like, I saw a tweet on this early on. So, I knew right away that they were addressing toxic fan culture with this film. And I saw somebody tweet something out that I really appreciated. And I think you and I would both appreciate this based on, like, our Star Trek fandom and whatnot. And it's, you can dislike this movie and not be the toxic fan culture that they're calling out in this film. It's okay to dislike something. There's a certain aspect of fandom that really takes it to the next level. You don't have to like everything. You're not a toxic fan just because you don't like something. You could dislike this movie and not be a toxic fan, right? There's lots of movies that I dislike and I wouldn't consider myself a toxic fandom. It's just the way that you respond to your dislike of something that lumps you into the category of whether or not you're a toxic fan. And, you know, you and I have had many conversations about Star Trek and whatnot, and you've said yourself, you're like, did I take it too far? And I said, I don't think you've ever taken it too far. You've always got good and valid points about why something doesn't work for you. And I appreciate those conversations with you. And there's a lot of people that I do appreciate those conversations with on different types of fandom as well. So, like, just realize, people, you don't have to love everything. And doesn't make you a toxic fan. You can criticize something and not be a toxic fan. And I think that's something that's been lost in social media nowadays.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, for as many people who, like, hate something in an over-the-top fashion, there are just as many people that love something in over-the-top fashion.
Absolutely.
Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, on the complete opposite end.
Because people are like, for all the, like, you're review bombing it, like, negatively. Like, well, a lot of people review bomb something positive where they give everything an A+.
Yeah.
Everything's the best thing they've ever seen. Everything deserves an Oscar.
Right. You know? And you can't say anything negative of it. Right? Because they just won't even hear it, and they won't even look at it critically, so I don't know.
Yeah, and I think that ultimately, with, like, I was joking, like, are they talking to me in this movie? Like, ultimately, like, look, I think everybody understands that even if people, the most people, even though you didn't like a sequel, you're not going to orchestrate a murder spree right? You know what I'm saying? Like, these people are clearly disturbed individuals, and right. they've taken it too far. And I don't think they're saying all fans are like that. I didn't get that vibe from it. I could see how, like, if you truly think everyone who didn't like The Last Jedi is a toxic fan, you probably feel, like, so vindicated by this.
Yeah, right.
But fine. You know what? Fine. You know, as someone who didn't like it, I didn't feel like they were, like, calling me out as a horrible person, right? So I'm cool with it. So that's where I land on the whole addressing the quote-unquote toxic fandom of it all. Yeah. So.
Yeah, awesome. I don't love The Last Jedi, but I don't hate it. It's fine. So, you know, I'm not too extreme either way on that one there. So, okay, so let's jump into this film here. I got to say that I was really impressed by this movie, and I wasn't sure where they were going to be going with it at first. But I really liked how they were addressing, like, modern remakes and whatnot and how they do this, because this is what our show is. This is what this podcast is, right? Is addressing yeah. remakes and sequels. And it's like, how do you do these movies in this day and age? How do you make sequels and remakes in this day and age? Because you get that all the time. You get people upset when you remake something, and you get people upset when you make a sequel, and you get people upset when you just reboot it from the beginning. So there's this kind of fine line that's going on in between here. And while they're sitting there talking about it the whole time, that is exactly what this movie is doing. And I think it did it very well.
Yeah, no, I really love the whole conversation of Randy's nephews talking, like, in the Randy Meeks Memorial Home Theater, home theater or something. And they're going through all the iterations. It's like, well, you know, you got your sequels, then you got your requels, right? And you have to bring some legacy characters. And, like, yeah, that's exactly. But that's funny, because that's what fans think, but that's also, like, boardroom thinking, too. I'm like, well, we're going to do another Star Wars. We've got to bring in Mark Hamill, right? It's like, you know, how much Sylvester Stallone do we need in the Creed movies? Like, it's just this, you know, it's totally how they think from every end of the spectrum. And you know, I really liked it that it was, like, Randy's niece and nephew, like, because I liked the character a lot. He's probably my favorite character in the franchise, and that continuing on, right? Like, I thought that was pretty cool how they were still the experts, and that goes on, like, they're to the point where, like, she's watching scenes from Stab with Randy in it,
yes,
and all this
yes.
stuff, like, extra scenes that we had never seen before of Stab. I don't know if Robert Rodriguez directed those per se, or at least, you know, who knows what they did with that, but they continue that conversation. I think that now I will say, ultimately, like, I liked this movie, right? I think Scream 4 already did most of this perhaps better, you know? So it's like, had this come out instead of Scream 4, it might have felt fresher, because it's like, it's Scream for a new generation. I'm like, well, we kind of did that. And that Scream 4 was kind of ahead of the curve, almost. But this is that current... just the term legacy characters is so interesting, because that's a term that's only existed in the last 5 or 7 years. I think, you know, you got to have Jamie Lee, right? Can't have Halloween without Jamie Lee at the end. And then, you know, to get into spoilers, really, like, killing Dewey was huge.
Yes, it is.
Because even they recognized it, like, after they killed Dewey, they were like, it was an honor.
Yes.
Because they killed Dewey. And I'm like, wow, this is the first time. Because I was thinking to myself, watching, like, him fight Ghostface, that I was like, I don't know. This is the first time I can watch this and actually be concerned for him, because I know there's not another one coming. And I thought he was going to survive, but they killed him at the end. And there has been a lot of discussion on it. Even the actors and actresses were like, hey, can we, like, film an alternate version of all this like the other ones? But no, they wanted it to have stakes. And even they comment on that at the end of the film. Like, we had to make sure that our version had stakes. And that's killing one of the three of them is huge. Now, I will say, I think Dewey was, of the three originals, or what, legacy characters, right? He had the strongest part of the movie of those three. Because I feel like... of the three of them, yeah, Sydney kind of comes in and does her thing. She's done so many times. And then, of course, you know, Gale is kind of there doing her... like, how many times have we gone through that beat again?
Yeah.
With Gale and Dewey, where it's like, oh, we broke up, and da-da-da-da-da. But I feel like Dewey really had, like, the best, like... I really liked his part in this, right? Yeah, like, to see where he was and all this. Like, he was my favorite of the big three that came back. And I was really sad when he died and shocked.
I agree. Now, what you're saying there, I think that this movie would have been just as fine if Gale Weathers had not been in it. Like, I don't think she added that much to the film. You know, we could have had the story with just Dewey and Sydney. I think that Sydney needed to come back. Right.
Oh, I agree. Yeah.
Because of, like, how much it tied into the original characters and whatnot. But I think we could have just left it as Gale not being there. Maybe seeing her just on the TV screen. Maybe just hearing her voice. Something like that. I don't know. What do you think about that?
I think that would have been stronger for the story. Right. Mm-hmm. You would have been like, oh, man, you didn't get the originals all back together. Like, people might have been upset. But I'm like, you know what? That that's so played out at this point. Just have her like, hey, she went off to New York and she's on TV.
Right.
Maybe she have her on a phone call. Maybe people might have felt cheated. But honestly, I would have felt like that would have been more appropriate for the story, because she gets shot and she's still fine. Like you just didn't need.
Yeah, they were that. All that was like. See, I really enjoyed this movie. Okay, but like on hindsight and like thinking about it and whatnot, I think there's some missteps in the movie. Like I think they really pulled a punch that they shouldn't have pulled when both of the twins survived. Okay.
Oh yeah.
Okay, I think the brother should have died. Okay, I think the brother twins should have died, and. The Sydney Jr., whatever her name is, I can't remember, her getting like stabbed and twisted with the knife in her belly, Courtney Cox getting a bullet in the belly, Neve Campbell getting a bullet in the belly, and them all just walking around and surviving. They definitely pulled some punches there that I don't think should have been pulled. Like, that's just too much damage for nobody to be affected.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, I was thinking that, too, especially about the opening, right? Because you got Tara, and you're like, it's traditionally the first character you see always dies, but they didn't die, and I was like, what's that about? But that played into the plot. They had to get the sister back, right? That was all part. I'm like, okay, well, that's explained. But you're right, like, when Courtney Cox get, like, shot in, like, the appendix or something, you know, I mean, how many times has she been shot or whatever in these movies? Stabbed or whatever? Like, she... Of the three, she either should have died in it or not been in it. I agree. Because Dewey. I would have much rather had Dewey moving forward. Because I think there's more potential story for him moving forward than there is for... What's she going to do? Oh, I wrote a book about Dewey. Oh, no, they're back. Oh, I got to go cover it for the news. Like, it's going to be the same beats over and over, right?
See, that first thing... I think Tara could have died in that first scene and they still went on. However, I kind of have... Like they needed her to survive for the final scene. Like, they needed a reason to get everybody to that house right at the end. And like,
oh, with the
inhaler was the thing there.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't know if it's there or not, but I also kind of got the impression that like Amber had a thing for her.
I thought that as well. I thought that's where they were going with it, because she was like, oh, come over. Oh, she's looking fetching tonight. Like, you know, that kind of, I'm like, are you guys a thing?
Yeah.
But they never, ever went there. And she was,
I don't think they like had a thing. I think Amber was attracted to her, right? And like, it was, they were friends, but that's why she
subtext.
Yeah. Because I don't think that Boimler, I'm sorry, but I don't remember his name. But anyways,
Richie. He's okay. Richie in the movie.
I don't think Richie was there for that first killing. So I was thinking about this on my second viewing, okay? So, like, you kind of think, you look at it and you think they both need to be there because there was the video footage of Amber. But
that could have been shot at any time
and then just sent. I think that whole first sequence was Amber, okay? Like, everything about it was Amber.
Because Richie was really in the other city with the sister.
That's right, yeah. Because he was pretty far away to get there and back in the night, right? So
right.
But... That's just my thought process on it. So they kept her alive. I don't know if they planned on the inhaler from the beginning or whatnot, but I mean, that's kind of how you got to look at it. It's either because she didn't want to kill her because she liked her, but they still had to hurt her to get the sister there, or they had that whole thing planned out from the beginning and knew that the inhaler was going to be the thing that they were going to try to get them back to that house. I don't know. Either way.
Yeah. Well, and that was, I mean, her being, Tara being injured most of the movie was pretty suspenseful. Like, her, like, getting into the wheelchair and her hand and like, awesome. And dragging herself. That was, I did really like when Ghostface was taunting Sam on the phone about like that. He's like, just you're too selfish to make a choice. Just say, I'll kill him and I'll let your sister live. I was like, that's actually a pretty good, I like it when he has some, actually speaks a little truth. And we're like, yeah, I don't know. I know it's an impossible choice, but it's like, kill your boyfriend or your sister. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like, you know, a no-win scenario, but yeah, I mean, you should probably choose him to kill your boyfriend, right? Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying.
Yeah. I mean, like, just so you know, Zach, like, if it's like, kill Marcy, my wife, or kill you, like, you're done. I'm sorry.
I understand that. Yeah. I'd be like, look, all power to you. I would have made the same choice myself. But that is one issue I have, like, with... I was thinking Amber was kind of shady, and I was like, she's probably involved in this somehow. She's too involved. She's talking about, you know, these particular things. She's the one in the hospital that killed Dewey?
Yeah.
I don't know about that. Like, is she wearing lifts? Like, how is she that, I don't know, tall and holding her own? Because she's a little person.
Yeah. No, it was her because Boimler was there and
he got the arm scratches that all the fake killers get.
Yeah.
You know? So, but no, you know what I'm saying, though? That's a little unrealistic that she could kill Dewey. But I guess Dewey is, like, still somewhat crippled.
Yes, and he's older.
Like, they make fun of how they stab him, like, 1,000 times. Yeah. But, you know, let's talk about the killers, then, because Dewey calls it. He's like, how long have you known him? He's the killer.
Yes.
Like, immediately. And then the movie even references, like, hey, Dewey, man, he knew it right off the top.
Right.
So what did you think of these guys as the killers?
Well, I gotta say that I thought they were good red herrings, and the fact that, like, Dewey called it out at the beginning helped me to not think it was the boyfriend, because he's like, he'll be obsessed with the stab movies, and they kept saying that he hadn't even seen them. He had. Obviously, he was lying, right? But, you know...
So, like Halloween, right?
Yeah.
No. Yeah, just like Halloween. Just like Halloween. That was funny.
But, you know, like, with him just sitting there saying, you know, like, he's starting to watch them and whatnot. I'm trying to prepare myself for this. So, I don't know. I thought that was kind of an interesting take on it. I didn't suspect any of them, honestly. I wasn't sure who it was. The whole time, they had me going for the whole film, that I didn't know who the killers were going to be.
Yeah, I mean, there were... I didn't like this Gunger cast as much as some of the other ones, mm-hmm. you know, maybe because I'm not as familiar with a lot of them, as, you know, I'm like, oh, that's so-and-so from that, or so-and-so from this, or I like this, you know. But I, you know, I think Sam did fine as, like, the new mm-hmm. Sydney, if you will, but the last movie, her niece, which is so good, mm-hmm. Emma, right? Or is Emma?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Emma's the girl from the TV show.
Oh, yeah, Emma's from the TV show, yeah, and that's what... Whoever it was, anyways.
But the genius of four was, like, she was the new Sydney, but she was also one of the killers. Mm-hmm. And that was so interesting. But the end here... Okay, so the whole motivation is actually these fans.
Right.
So apparently Amber and Richie are huge Stab fans, and they think that they've run out of source material, which is actually true. They have run out of source material.
They have, yep.
So, like, we got to give them some new source material because these sequels keep sucking. And so they orchestrate this whole thing because they hear through the town rumors that Sam is actually the daughter of Billy Loomis, who we didn't predict this, but I think we kind of circled around it, didn't we, Brandon?
We did. Now, that threw me for a loop starting the film. I wish that I hadn't said that in Scream 4, but... So again, back in our Scream 4 discussion, I'm like, oh, we know that the killer is going to be Sydney's kid that she had with Billy Loomis back because they had sex and whatnot. Well, it turns out that Billy Loomis did have a kid with somebody else. I don't know who the mother's supposed to be, but I'll tell you, man, I kept expecting Sydney to be their mom. As soon as they said that she was Billy Loomis's daughter, I was expecting
The mom's out of town.
The mom's out of town.
They don't say their names. Maybe they change their name for their, you know.
Because she said Chrissy or something like that, right? Like when the killer phoned at the beginning.
But at the beginning, though, she's like, Sydney Prescott, I know this one, right? So, but maybe they all, maybe it's a family that changed their name or something.
She was the younger one, right? So she didn't know the history, right?
Yeah.
So I was thinking that the whole time. But I turned out to be wrong, which is fine.
I was thinking that for a good 20 minutes as well. So that's fine.
Now I want to know who it is.
Some side character, I'm sure. Just like Stu had a sister who's the mother of so-and-so, right? Yeah. It gets real convoluted, but they have to keep pulling on these strings.
Yeah.
So
what did you think of that aspect? Because that, with it not being Sydney, with it being Billy Loomis's kid from another woman completely, that's pretty far out of left field.
It is, and I don't know why they needed to, like, bring Billy Loomis back, and then, like I said, they brought back CGI Skeet Ulrich, yeah. Like, DH CGI, like nodding her along, and because she was taking psychedelic antibiotics, right, for her psychosis or whatever. She was mm-hmm. seeing her dad, and, like, so at first it's kind of a haunting thing, but then it's like an encouragement thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at the end, he's like, hey, check out the knife down there. I'm like, that was a step too far.
Yeah.
And then, like, at the end of the movie, like, he gives her, like, the nod of approval. I'm like, okay, but he is a bad person. He is a serial killer from the first movie.
Yeah.
And now it's like, I get what they're saying, like, even though she came from a dark place, she's, you know, a Sam here, right? That's not going to define her and stuff, but that was just a very odd use of Billy Loomis, period. And I don't think you needed to see his ghost,
yeah.
Right?
I think that she's going to be the killer in Scream 6.
Maybe. A Halloween 4 or 5 situation, yeah. Except you do it right. Yeah. Although, for this movie, you know, criticizing fandom and stuff and all these requels, like, they do the same thing. Like, you CGI DH someone and put them in your movie for pure fan service.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what these movies that you criticize or think you're criticizing are doing. So I don't know if that was self-aware or what. That's the thing with these Scream movies. You can always say, oh, well, it's a commentary. Like Scream 3, you like it more than me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, they're commenting all this stuff that bothers you. I'm like, Yeah, but it still bothers me. So I just thought it was an odd use of that character.
They're not they're not criticizing the movies. They're criticizing the fandom. Right? They're joking about the movies because even in there too, they're like, why are Stab 8 isn't called Stab 8, it's called Stab.
See, that made me okay with this not being called Scream 5. I'm like, okay, you mentioned it in your movie.
It's like the YouTuber version, like, who are you guys kidding? We know it's Stab 5,
we all know
right?
It's Stab 8.
Or we all know it's Stab 8, right? But the thing that, like, that upset the fans is that the movie was so different and whatnot, because in Stab 8, like, the killer's got a flamethrower. Sidney Prescott's not even in it, right? They mention that. That's the character of Sidney Prescott is not in Stab 8, right? So it's because it's just kind of gone off the walls. And so when that's when they jump the shark, right? Like, that's a term that's been around forever, jumping the shark. So when the series has jumped the shark, that's when you reboot it and restart
it. You know who jumped the shark?
I do.
Principal Henry Winkler.
Yes, that's right. Henry Winkler from Happy Days. So, anywho. So they're not criticizing the films. They are criticizing the fandom. So, is the main thing about it.
Were you shocked when Boimler pulled out the knife there at the end? I mean, like, I think when he was, like, hiding in the closet, I was like, okay, he's definitely the one making this phone call right now, right?
Not until the end did they have me. I did not suspect him once. His whole motivation to go into the basement for the beer and whatnot, like, I don't know, they pulled the wool over my eyes. I didn't suspect him once.
They did a whole lot of the, oh, well, you must be the killer in this movie, though, yes. Didn't they?
But it's interesting, it's like when you go back to that first sequence, right, when after...
In the refrigerator?
Not the refrigerator. That first sequence when, what's the girl's name? Sam. When Sam's attacked in the hospital, and Amber and the boyfriend are in there with the sisters, and the cops interrogating her, and they're like, well, maybe you're the killer.
Yeah.
And she says to him, well, maybe you're the killer. Netflix
and they're
is
both the killers,
and
they
actually
know it.
Both are the killers. And so watching it a second time, you can see the looks that they're giving each other, right? Mm. But, you know, anyways, I don't know. I think it's smart, and I think it works well on a rewatch. I don't think it's – I think it's written well enough on a rewatch that it works for me.
Yeah, no, and I'm looking forward to rewatching all these, really. Like, I need to get the complete – it's not going to be complete because they're making Scream 6, but I'll get – because I don't own any of these because, you know, I had never seen these before. But, no, definitely, this is, you know, probably my favorite horror franchise now, so I'll be getting all these when they all come out. And, like, the scene in the refrigerator with Mindy,
yep.
who was Randy's niece, and Mindy and Amber, mm-hmm. you know, was like, you came down here by yourself. You're the killer. You're the killer. And like the music even changes the mess with your emotions, mm-hmm. which is pretty good. And so one of the best sequences, though, talking about refrigerator, I'm thinking of the other sequence with Wes, when he's going around his house, opening cabinets and closing doors so many times. It was like, you're just waiting for Ghostface to be behind the door, and he never is. That's just good stuff. So yeah, I mean, I'd never heard of these directors before. I don't know what they've done. Obviously, Wes Craven is a big shoes to fill. And I think as far as these kind of things go, I think they did a really good job with this stuff, like the suspense and the buildups and the phone calls, like all the tropes are there. And I think they did them pretty well. And they, much like Scream 4, they incorporated newer technology, like we're talking about, like the texting
and
locking videos
the doors and stuff. Like
oh,
that.
Yeah. The security locking the doors.
It was pretty good.
That was pretty good.
I want to ask what you think about. So like the violence in this one has gone up a notch over the previous films. What did you think of the deaths in this one? Like,
well, I guess people's tolerance has gone up, perhaps, mm-hmm. right? In a world of Saw and Hostel and all that stuff. I mean, because Scream 4 was pretty intense, too.
This one, I think, was worse, though. Like, what was the worst death in Scream 4?
I guess where Anthony Anderson gets stabbed in the head. Maybe.
Which one's that? Which one's he?
He's the cop. F. Bruce Willis.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
That's probably a bad one. But no,
where
people get
looking. Like, that was
CGI,
a bad one.
Yeah. Where people get slashed in this is worse. Like Boimler gets stabbed in the face, and then Wes gets stabbed, like,
through the side of the
cheek and the neck. Yeah.
It goes through this one neck, and it doesn't come out the back. It comes out the other side of the same side of the neck. His mom, the cop, like, she gets a pretty bloody death.
Yeah, she gets stabbed like so many times.
Yes. And like they showed multiple shots, like a couple of different people, like the cop, she got like shanked like a bunch of times in the side, right, when she was down. But then Dewey, they lifted the knife and, like, gutted him.
That's what's great. Yeah, I don't believe that Amber could do that.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Yeah.
You know what I mean? but no, they had to make sure you knew Dewey was really dead this time. Because how many times has Dewey been in this situation?
At least four.
Right. Right. And so, like, at least that repetitive cycle is finally over. He's not going to get injured and come back. And then him and Courtney Cox are going to reconcile. If she just hadn't called him at that exact moment, it's really her fault she's dead.
Yeah.
Because Gail called him right when he was going to unmask, you know, Ghostface. I got to say, for the kills and stuff, like, I thought they were pretty on par with everything else. Like, they were a little more extreme, but, like, this is the... It's a rated R movie. This is the world we live in nowadays, right? Mm-hmm. So, but some of it was like, yikes. I mean, I just, like, when she got, like, in the very beginning, like, when she got stabbed in the hand, when Tara, I was like, oh, my
That's
God.
That's awesome. So awesome. Yes,
your blood loss.
I'm here for all of this, okay? So I loved all of this stuff. All of this stuff was wonderful. I like seeing that stuff. That right through the hand, like, that's unique. You know, like, we go back to Halloween Kills, right? When Big John gets stabbed in the armpit. Right? Like, that's just something you haven't seen before. Like, it's something new and creative. Like, after all these movies, it's hard to come up with a unique way to injure somebody.
Yeah.
You know? So, I don't know. I appreciate seeing that stuff, the creativity that goes into it and whatnot. So, I don't know. I like that.
Oh, you know, I have a question for you. When did Sheriff Hicks have her son, Wes? Because if this is only 11 years after Scream 4... He must have been born by then.
Yeah, sometime in between 3 and 4.
But she was crushing pretty hard on Dewey. I guess she had a kid.
She's a single mom.
And, yeah, single mom. There we go. Mom. I don't think I was... Because I was trying to do the math. I was like, wait a minute. Yep. This kid's like 17.
Yep.
That movie was 11 years ago.
Yeah.
So that's fine. That's fine, I guess.
Yeah.
But
that whole sequence when she's in the vehicle talking to the killer and then she's got to go back. I don't know. I love that.
Yeah, no, that was good. And it's funny, he's like, oh my God, my mom's a character in those movies. And they're like, nobody cares about the sequels, Wes.
Yes. Anywho. Okay, so, I don't know, like, not much else to go on. I don't think anything else we need to adjust, anything we haven't talked about yet?
No, I guess the big reveal at the end is, oh my God, they're living in Stu's old house,
yeah.
Right?
Oh,
so
yeah,
it's
yeah,
literally
yeah, yeah.
The exact same location that the end of the first movie, they're in the kitchen again. You know,
which I thought was, so that it was a surprise to me. But when she's watching the video, I'm like, man, this room, I didn't see it, but I'm like, this room looks like the room from the first one. Cause she's sitting there watching Stab. Right. And I'm like, man, that looks very similar. That's kind of funny. And when they reveal that it is actually Stu's house, I'm like, oh man, that's pretty cool.
And that makes sense that, like, that's how Amber got hooked into him. Like, oh my God, my family lives in the house that all this took place in. So I'm like, okay. That makes a little sense. Mm-hmm. And but okay, yeah, speaking of, you know, all that stuff, you know, Amber, the house and the violence, like how she gets like set on fire because they put hand sanitizer on her.
Awesome.
That's horrible.
Awesome.
Now, and I was fine with that brutal death up until when she comes running after them with the knife. I'm like, come on. That reminded me of Scream 3. Just like, I know, like, they always come back. Yeah. Right. But that was a step too far. She would be dead. Okay.
Well,
she would be dead at the point.
No, because that would have burnt off pretty quickly, right?
That's man. I'd have no pain tolerance, so I would just have crawled up and died if that happened to me. Yeah.
Okay, let me tell you something. When we were in high school, we had an entrepreneurial project, and some friends and I were filming a commercial, and the thing that they entrepreneured is like this miracle pill that could do everything, and one of the things that it could do was cure athlete's foot. So my friend Natalie like poured like lighter fluid all over her foot. They lit it, right? Like they actually lit it on her foot.
Ooh.
And as she's like freaked out and just started stomping the floor and running around all over the place. And it burned out pretty quick. So all I'm going to say is that it burned out pretty quick. So, yeah.
Well, they shot her in the head and she's dead. And I did like when Gail and Sydney are talking to Sam, and Sam's like, so you want me to team up with you and this TV lady to murder this person? Like, yes, exactly. That's correct.
Well, I don't know. I kind of like that aspect of it because it's like, you know what? We're not going to put up with this anymore. We're not going to deal with the cops. We're just going to deal with this ourselves because we've been through this 4 times already.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. It
stretches believability at this point. that's how these sequels do. And then there is a certain sense of finality to it, mm-hmm. right? I mean, the pass the torch, like, here's the torch. you can have it, you know. And then you know they kind of, they're off of the side and they walk off, and then it's like the exact same shot the first movie ends on, mm-hmm. right? There's a reporter yep. in front of the house. Yep. You zoom out. I'm like, okay, bookends or something in a way. Yep. So I, you know, there you go. So this would, like the last one, pretty good way to end it. But we'll get to that in a second. But yeah, so there we go. Like I enjoyed it. You enjoyed it more than me. Mm-hmm. But before we get to that, Brandon, what do you think the phone call count is in this movie?
10.
No.
No, there's probably 10 in that first scene, weren't there?
So this is what I had. And again, this is a new movie. We have to watch in a theater. So if I miss some, just sorry. But this is what I got. 4 in the opening sequence. One at the bowling alley. Mm-hmm. One at the hospital. One when Sydney's, you know, being called by Dewey. Two of Hicks in the car, and then one of Wes in the shower. One of Richie when he's eating the product placement Pizza Hut box. That was very evident to me. We had 3 at the hospital and that whole confrontation there. With these hospitals where no one is ever in, by the way. It's always Halloween 2. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I mean, Halloween 2, I'm like, okay, they're understaffed. It's Halloween. People are off. I don't know why no one works at this hospital. This hospital would be shut down between what happened in this one and what happened in Scream 4, let me tell you.
Well, I think what happened is all the nurses got tired from the pandemic, and so they all quit. So they're just understaffed.
There it is. This is a COVID movie after all. Okay. So and Ghostface is wearing a mask, so being very responsible. Yeah, good. And then we had one of when Sydney calls Sam at the house. When Sydney gets a call from Ghostface at the house, we had to get, you know, him to say, hello, Sydney. Mm-hmm. Got it in there. And then finally at the climax, the phone rings as well. So that's going to bring us to 17.
Oof. Is that the most? Total. Is that the most?
That actually, by my calculation, that actually is the same number we had in Scream 4.
Okay.
So which brings us to a franchise phone call count of 65.
Oof. 65. That's a good one. Right on. Excellent. Well, how many phone calls out of 5 would you give this? How many rings of the phone out of 5 would you give this?
I would let the phone ring 3.5 times.
3.5? Really?
3.5 times. I had some issues with it. I mean, it wasn't... I liked it. I enjoyed it.
Takes your toxic fandom and shove it, man.
that's what it is. They didn't do it exactly the way I wanted to, Brandon. I just really feel like if Scream 4 didn't exist, I might like this more. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like they did this much better in Scream 4. Mm-hmm. I
can see that
to a certain extent.
I can see that because like even the motivation is like one is we want to be internet famous, and the other one is we didn't like what we're doing, so we're going to give them material to make a new movie and become famous that way, kind of thing, right? It wasn't fame that they were looking for; they were looking for a new movie, right? So, you know, I can see that. I can see them you thinking that it's similar to Scream 4. I definitely enjoyed it a bit more than you. I walked out of this thinking this is 5 stars, but after thinking about it for a little while and even talking with you here, I think I'm going to drop my rating down to a 4 for this movie. So, I mean, Scream 1 gives me a 5. The rest of them give me a 4. So, I mean, that's still a pretty solid franchise, man.
Yeah, I mean, I got to say, like, this is probably my favorite horror franchise. It's consistently good because Scream 3, you know, was a misstep. Mm-hmm. But for the rest of, and I still 3 out of 5 for that one for me, you know. But the rest of these, I mean, like, these are good to great, all of them. And while we're talking here, I want to say last word. And I've been talking about Scream 4 so much. Emma Roberts is the actress. Jill Roberts is the character.
There you go.
So Emma. So the Scream TV show. We're like, we'll call her the character from Scream 4, the actress, I guess. So and I think to me, maybe more than anything, she's what sets 4 over this one, because mm-hmm. just the whole the character, the performance, the motivation, and all and the twist there. Which, you know, we had new characters here and all that, but like the tie in to Billy Loomis. I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. So I'm calling it again. It's gonna be Stu next time. So let's get into it. So we know Scream 6 is coming, but leaving where this is, right? Just if you didn't know any of that, is this franchise fatigued? Do you want to see more? What do you
think? So I'm gonna say no. It's not fatigued at this point. And the reason I'm gonna say no is because these directors are a wonderful new voice and a wonderful new addition to this franchise, and I hope they come back for more. I think they've honored the previous 4 films and done a very good job bringing it to the modern day. I want to see more. I want these guys to come back and do another film.
You know, I'm going to say no as well, mm-hmm. because I think now that, you know, Dewey is done, mm-hmm. right? We can leave Gale behind finally, too. Mm-hmm. We can stop doing the same exact things that we've done with them time and time again, right? And then, you know, you have to bring Sydney back, but have her, like, be when we see the first scene we see Sydney in Stream 6, read the book that Gale wrote about Dewey, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. There's a picture of David Arquette on it, right? Something like that. And then just leave it at that. And then we can move past that and then move in the new territory. Because we do have new, you know, we have potentially new protagonists. Because mm-hmm. so, you thought in Scream 4, oh, Jill's the new Sydney and she'll carry the franchise on. No, she's the villain. She's dead. Mm-hmm. So there really wasn't, bring Kirby back, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Hey, as long as you got Roger Jackson around, the James Earl Jones of Scream, mm-hmm. You can keep making these movies. So I'm surprisingly, although I like this less than the last one, I am going to say that it's not fatigue. And like you said, we got new people with new ideas, and they seem excited about it. It's happening, so let's see what they do.
Well, here's a thought for you, though. You say as long as that guy comes back because he's the James Earl Jones of the franchise. I mean, based on that last episode of Mandalorian and how they created Luke's voice, do we even need this guy anymore?
I'm sure they have enough raw material where they really don't. They don't need Roger Jackson anymore.
Or not Mandalorian, Book of Boba Fett. It might as well be called Mandalorian. But
might as well be Mandalorian. Spoilers for the book. Look, if you're online at all, you know what's going on in Star Wars right now, yes. Which is its own funny commentary on this. Side note, they better have recorded James Earl Jones in that same software.
Oh, yeah.
Right, so we can get some Darth Vader
from now on, yeah. So, anyways, excellent, right on. Okay, well, that's great, Zach. Awesome. I appreciate all that you've done for me, even though you're a very toxic fan. So, redo Scream 8. Scream 5, something like that.
Well, it's going to be funny when they actually get to Scream 8.
Yeah, I think so.
At this point, they're going to be catching up to the... do you think they're going to leave this stuff behind, though? The movie thing? I guess we'll talk about that in our recap mm-hmm. episode. But at some point, they should probably leave behind the movies influence everything that's going on, right?
No.
No. Okay. Answer question answered.
Excellent. Thank you so much to Ken Tripp and Tony Robinson for being executive producers of the network. Thank you so much to Tony Robinson for creating our wonderful art. Thank you so much to Zach Tripp for creating our wonderful theme music. If you want to find us on Twitter, you can find us at Franchise Fatigue. You can find the network at UFP Earth. You can check us out you can send us an email if you want, franchisefatigue@ufp.earth. Thank you so much to our associate producers, Casey Pettit and David Willett. We really, truly appreciate all that you've done for our network and by supporting our show in particular.
And hey, Brandon, we have a new associate producer.
Do we?
Yeah, shout out to Nathan Rothatcher.
Nice.
Who is a big fan of our podcast, and he's a big fan of my Always Told in the Smallville podcast, too. So, Nathan, thank you very much for bringing your support on over here to Franchise Fatigue.
Thank you, Nathan. We appreciate it. That's wonderful. Sorry for the delay on getting your recognition there, because we've been recording these
screams in advance. So
from when they're normally released. So, excellent, right on. And, I guess that's it. So, until next time when we do our recap. And then we're coming back. What are we coming back with? What's our next movie? Franchise.
We're coming back with Major League. In On Deck Major League. That's right. The Major League trilogy. Yes, there are three of them. Yes, we'll be talking about all three of them. And as usual, there's some Star Trek connections we can make jokes about, because that's usually the number one criteria we have when we do a franchise.
Baseball. I don't know much about baseball. What do I need to know about baseball?
We'll explain it all to you
okay.
in the next podcast. But Brandon, when you aren't dousing people with hand sanitizer out there, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Brandon Metella. You can find me here on the network with another show called Infinite Diversity, which is all about new Star Trek. And you can find me over on the Fandom Podcast Network with a show called Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, where we cover all of Hitch's films in chronological order. Zach, where can people find you when you're not watching The Last Jedi for the 12th time?
Well, you can find me personally on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreonZach. I also host of another podcast here at UFP, Sasquatch, a Bigfoot multimedia podcast where me and Ken Tripp talk about movies and documentaries and books and all kinds of fun stuff about the phenomena of Bigfoot. You can find us on Twitter at SasquatchPod. And of course, I am the host of Always Hold on to Smallville. We talk about each and every episode of that young Superman show. You can find us on Twitter at AlwaysMallville. With one S.
Excellent. Well, that's all we got for you today. Until next time, when we cover our Scream recap, and then the time after that when we cover Major League. Careful not to steal any bases.
Goodbye, Sydney.
This has been a production of MTMR Media Works.